This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right, let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, let's jump right into it. It is Hour 3 rolling along this morning as we get ready for the first round of the NBA playoffs. You got those play-in games, two last night, two tonight, but then everything kind of kicks in this weekend, including the Phoenix Suns, who've got a series coming up against the Los Angeles Clippers. Kevin Ray joining us on a Progressive guest line. Drivers who switch and save with Progressive save nearly $700 on average. Visit them for a quote at Progressive.com or call 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. He's the Suns television play-by-play announcer. As I said earlier, Phoenix getting ready for the Clippers. How are you, Kevin?
I'm well. How are you this morning?
Thank you so much. All right, let's go back to February. Let's go back to the rumblings early about the Kevin Durant acquisition. When did it started to get heated up? When did, was there a feeling in the Valley that Kevin Durant and this deal was going to get done?
Well, you know, the reality is that it was a very well-kept secret. It surprised all, and that really shouldn't come as a surprise to anybody that has kind of known and followed James Jones in his time as a general manager. He's not a guy that tries to, you know, work trades through, you know, through public maneuvering. He tries to keep things very private, and in this particular instance, did a really good job of it. I mean, there were rumors over the summer, you know, KD wanting to come to Phoenix, and there were discussions then. Everybody knew that. But no one anticipated the quick move between the Suns and Kevin Durant. But it came pretty clear once Kyrie Irving left that KD was not going to be content there in Brooklyn.
So then Kevin Durant comes to Phoenix, plays a few games, has the home opener, slips, falls, is out. How has the gelling worked since he's been back in the lineup? I know they went on an 8-0 run at one point. But overall, when you look at the chemistry on the court, how quickly did he adapt, and how quickly has that come together?
I think that's one of the real attributes of Kevin. And you talk to other coaches around the league. You talk in here like Greg Popovich, coached him in Team USA, just about, you know, Kevin's unselfishness and his high basketball IQ and his really ability to kind of be a chameleon and fit in with pretty much any system, and it has been, you know, pretty much seamless. You say unbeaten so far, not a large body of work, but unbeaten nonetheless.
From the standpoint of the playoffs, in terms of what you need for the playoffs to make a successful run, is there still depth on this Phoenix Suns roster that's enough? You got a good front side of it. How's the middle side of the roster for Monty Williams?
Yeah. It's the one area that people have, you know, pointed to and said, you know, oh, the Suns, you know, gave up so much of their depth. I mean, really, the only depth that was given up was obviously Cam Johnson, who was coming off, you know, the injury, and then Dario Saric. And Dario had not been playing a lot because he, too, had been coming off of an injury. You know, there is depth on our bench. Torrey Craig, for example, has been starting much of the season after the trade, and then when Kevin Durant went down, you've got Torrey Craig coming off the bench. And the one thing that people have to remember, too, you get into the playoffs, and that bench rotation shortens significantly.
Right.
I mean, you are typically looking at your starters playing, you know, 35, 40 minutes a night. So it's not as though you need somebody to carry the water, you know, for 25 minutes. I think the Suns will be fine. It's been bumpy at times just due to the number of injuries that we've even had on the bench. But I think the Suns will be just fine.
For some of the young guys, have you noticed a feeling of what the run to the finals a couple of years ago has meant to them in terms of what they do in the postseason, about the mindset of going into the postseason?
Yeah, you know, keep in mind, this is not – there's only five guys on this team that went to that NBA Finals team, NBA Finals. You know, you look on paper and you just see Phoenix Suns and back in the playoffs, and I think a lot of times people just kind of gloss over of who was on that team and who was on this present team. So it's not as though – you have, you know, eight or nine guys from that squad from the finals run, but you've got some veteran guys, you know, who've got playoff experience. And of course, not the least of which is Kevin Durant. So any kind of questions or nerves can quickly be settled with a conversation with him and Chris Paul.
How is Chris Paul? We talked about the gelling. How is Chris Paul and Kevin Durant? How have they come together on the same page?
Well, it's been fantastic, you know, because by having Kevin actually, you know, one of the game plans coming into this season was getting Chris more off the ball. I think what we saw come to light the last couple of seasons is because Chris, you know, has been the point guard, that so much work was heaped on his shoulders, and come playoff time, you know, teams started trapping him, and that usage rate finally caught up with him. And that was one of the plans, even before they made the trade for Kevin Durant, that playing Chris off the ball more, getting other guys to be able to handle the ball, bring the ball up across midcourt. And so he is, for the first time in his career, you can imagine here in year 18, he's in more catch-and-shoot situations in the last 15 games than he's been in his entire career. But you look at his numbers, last seven games that he played in, he's shooting 46% from beyond the arc. So I would say those numbers would suggest he's doing just fine.
We're talking to Kevin Raitt, Suns television play-by-play announcers. They get ready for the first round of the playoffs on our Progressive guest line. So the angle for the Clippers are they don't have Paul George, but they've got Russell Westbrook, and there's a lot of angles between Westbrook and going up against with Durant. But overall, how do you see the Clippers? How do you see the Clippers without Paul George in this series?
Well, look, I still see a very talented team, as you point out, led by Kawhi Leonard. And you know, they've rested him a ton this season, didn't play his first back-to-back game until earlier this month, and that was the first time in 2 years that he had played back-to-back. So Kawhi is fresh, he's healthy, and you look at his numbers over the last, I think, 18, 19 games, and it's, you know, Kawhi Leonard basketball, shooting or scoring in ball at about 27, 28 points per game, shooting at a high clip from the field. So you start there, and, you know, people should not sleep on Russell Westbrook. You look at what he has done since coming over to the Clippers, moving down the hallway from the Lakers locker room to the Clippers locker room, and it looks like the old Russ, you know, scoring the ball in ways that he scored. He's shooting the ball much better with the Clippers. And they're just using him really the way that Russ needs to be used. So he's a big factor. And then, you know, you look at a couple of guys that they were able to acquire as well. Eric Gordon, he's a flamethrower that can knock down a ton of threes. You know, the guy that I look at as the wild card is Norman Powell. Norman Powell, also healthy. He had missed several games due to a shoulder injury. But Powell is playing outstanding basketball right now. So this is a Clippers team that, yes, they would love to have Paul George back. Just makes them a very different club. But they've still got plenty of talent and plenty of depth.
As a guy that's had a front row seat to so many teams in the Western Conference, and as we've been looking at the West and seeing some really good points on almost every one of them, when you look at this, at the teams that are going into the postseason in the conference, how much of it is less top to bottom, but more kind of jumbled together?
Yeah, I mean, look, if you followed the standings all season long, you felt like that was going to be the case, even coming into the postseason. That,
yeah.
Yes, Denver's number one, but even as recently as 2 weeks ago, the 11th seed was a team you were like, well, you know, they've got this guy, and this guy. So they could at least, you know, be a disruptor, if nothing else. And it just speaks to the depth and the overall parity of the league. And I said this on the telecast the other day, you know, if I'm Adam Silver sitting here on Sunday afternoon, game 82, and I still have this many positions left up in the air, you know, you couldn't have designed it any better.
I always like to end these conversations on a big picture question. And if you don't mind, the city of Phoenix and its love affair with this basketball team, because it was the first professional team to arrive in the city and everybody else came. And as that city grew, how much of that team is woven into the fabric of the community still, even after 40 plus years of being in the NBA?
Yeah, and it's a great point. It's still very much so. I mean, this is a Suns town. You know, we've got all four majors, and you know, they've all got their own fan base. But this is a Suns town. This is a Suns state, for that matter. You know, the entire state of Arizona, and you know, you look at Devin Booker, and when in his second he basically planted his flag here because it was clear that Book was going to be, you know, one of those special talents. And already at that point, people were talking about, oh, he's going to ask out. He's going to, you know, demand a trade because the team was in, you know, such disarray at the time with the leadership. But Book planted his flag. And, you know, I think because of that, just this city embraced him in ways, you know, like he is, you know, their son, and he embraced them, you know, like a long lost family member. And because of that, that's only grown as this team has continued to win. And then you plug in the talented personnel on the floor around Book, but, you know, starting with the leadership of Monty Williams and James Jones, just the way they've conducted themselves. So yes, this city and state are very much, Phoenix Suns owned.
And they were the ones that, you know, sort of paved the way for everybody to arrive in the Valley. I appreciate it. Kevin, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
You bet. My pleasure.
Absolutely. As the Phoenix Suns begin their quest to get back to the NBA Finals starting this weekend with a game against the Los Angeles Clippers. And, yeah, like you said, Kevin Durant, yeah, there's not a lot of body of work here, but in the work that they do have, 8-0 in the lineup, it has been a very nice gelling thing. But he made a very, very good point. And I think that is one thing that gets lost occasionally in conversations about situations like what Phoenix finds themselves in. When people say, well, I know they've got these guys, but who's the fifth and sixth and seventh guy? Well, in the playoffs, you do shorten your bench, and you're asking your guys to go 40 minutes. That's just the way the playoff basketball works, especially in the opening rounds where you've got a good gap between games. You're not playing back-to-backs. You're not playing in a situation where you're flying overnight to play a game, you know, very quickly. You can ask a lot of the starters, and they have tremendous starters. We'll continue. We're going to do the Sacramento Kings also coming up in this hour.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsNap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, as we continue with Wake Up Call on SportsNap Radio, our thanks to Kevin Ray, play-by-play TV voice of the Phoenix Suns. And for those of you who don't know the history, it's kind of well pointed out that, remember, Jerry Colangelo was the original owner of the Phoenix Suns, and Phoenix was kind of a stopover town in the 70s. It really was. Like, it was just a place in the desert. It was a city, but, you know, it was kind of like where you would stop on your way to L.A., right? It was like, it wasn't a huge city yet, and it was a desert climate and whatnot, and people moved there for who had asthma and things like that. It was like, you know, desert climate, and the Jerry Colangelo went there with the Phoenix Suns to make basketball work in the 70s when the NBA was kind of like, eh, yeah, we're still not, we're not getting on, you know, we're still tape delayed and on TV and whatnot. And he planted the roots there. And before you know it, it took a little bit. It was somewhat successful. They played in the NBA Finals and whatnot in the 70s. And then the St. Louis Cardinals moved there, in, I want to say in the late 80s, 88 or so. They moved there, and then they got the Diamondbacks came in 1998 as an expansion team along with Tampa Bay, but they also got the Winnipeg Jets, not this Winnipeg Jets. That became I think that used to be the Atlanta Thrashers. It's very difficult sometimes in the NHL to keep up with who was who, but the Winnipeg Jets moved to Arizona. They were the Phoenix Coyotes for a while and then became the Arizona Coyotes. And then the Atlanta Thrashers moved back to Winnipeg and they just became the Jets. So if you're going franchise to franchise, that Winnipeg Jets that you see now is not like the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah.
Where the Cleveland Browns were an expansion team that was given.
So did
all
they get
of
the history back?
I wonder about that. I should ask an NHL person maybe next week if that's the case.
Write that down.
Yeah, exactly. Like I'm trying to think of, like, Teemu Selanne. Was he, like, an old Winnipeg Jet player? Is he in the history books of the Phoenix, Arizona Coyotes?
I only know him as a duck.
Yeah, that's right. That's true.
I think he made more of his name as a duck.
So is, trying to think of somebody else that was on the Winnipeg Jets back in the day. I'm trying to think of, like, my old 1994 video game. The little Nintendo. No, the Sega. The Sega Genesis hockey game. Make Gretzky's head bleed. I'm trying to think. And whoever was on those teams, are they in the history books of the Phoenix, Arizona Coyotes? Well, I know their play-by-play announcer moved with them. I remember that because when I was in Vegas, I worked for a station, and we were an affiliate of the Suns and the Coyotes. And I actually had a number of conversations with the radio play-by-play guy about our affiliation and whatnot. And he moved down with them. So I remember that. But that's how Phoenix grew into a four-sport town, was the Phoenix Suns were the first ones to pave the way for the other teams. And I'm trying to think, I haven't won a title in anything. No, the Diamondbacks won a World Series. I'm sorry. Diamondbacks won a World Series. How could I ever forget that? That was in 2001. That was the famous after 9/11 World Series. So, yeah, but it's a great town. You lived there. I lived in Vegas, not far. I went down to Phoenix a couple times. But
just yeah, hot.
It's just hot, really hot.
I mean, Phoenix, I mean, it's really a great place to be. I mean, I have nothing but fond memories, and it's just the heat. That was it. I mean, we used to drive up to Flagstaff.
Flagstaff. That's where the Cardinals have camp.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was 2 hours away, and we literally would just go up there. I mean, there's not much of a downtown area. There is a downtown area. There's shops and stuff, so it was fun walking around. But we literally just drove up there just so we can walk around outside.
Yeah, just be outside. Exactly.
That was it.
I want to get to this one other thing because Robert on Facebook was asking me about the USFL and the XFL. USFL starting what this
Aren't
weekend?
Aren't they the same thing?
Yeah, right. And I told him, I said, I have not heard any news about the XFL ratings anymore.
Not true.
Sort of forgetting that they're playing. And yeah, like the St. Louis Battlehawks are pretty good and DC Defenders are pretty good.
Yeah, aren't the Battlehawks supposed to be like the best?
Seattle's pretty good. Yeah.
In fact, the only story I've ever really heard out of the XFL when I did the when I was talking about the Battlehawks April Fool's joke.
Right, right. Yeah.
That's the last thing I really know.
And then there was AJ McCarron, like, I want to play for my kids, so I'd rather play than be a backup in the NFL, which is, all right, I get it, but still. Backup in the NFL is a pretty good gig, but he wants to play so his kids have memories of him playing. But I haven't heard much else. Like it doesn't seem to be a tremendous amount of promotion.
No, but I mean, you know, I have the TV ratings here if you want to know. So Battlehawks versus the Vegas Vipers on the four letter, 868,000.
They probably wish that was a million.
Yeah, but I mean, the Brahmas versus the Roughnecks, which was on ABC, was 1.006 million.
All
right. So I mean, something. But then you had like the Seattle Sea Dragons versus the DC Defenders, which was shown on ESPN2. It's 487,000.
Well, you had the Masters, so but you had like a delayed second round, third round.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like you had a bunch of Masters.
They were
on Sunday, but
this article's all about it just because, you know, they're not counting ESPN Plus viewership, so they have no idea that. Right. But this, you know, this is like, hey, this is what the final numbers looked like prior to the USFL competition.
I would be curious to see how this league, like, what does The Rock think of the first year? Is he happy with the product? Is he wishing the numbers were better? Because remember, Vince McMahon, the first go-around of this, he made it all about the ratings. The ratings were the only thing that mattered. He couldn't have cared less if they were selling tickets or merchandise. He had a partnership with NBC, and he wanted big numbers. And then when the numbers kind of dwindled and he realized they were never going to go back up again, that's when they tried those goofy things, and it just didn't work. And then he just went, nah, it's enough. I wonder if Rock is like, no, ratings are one thing, but I'm really trying to build this thing up. Because remember, the USFL, if I'm not mistaken, please correct me if I'm wrong, wasn't the USFL last year the one that all the games were in Birmingham, Alabama?
Yes.
Remember that?
Yes.
Now, I don't know if that's the case this year because I'm not following enough with the USFL.
I think they're going to home stadiums.
But I said last year, you're not going to be successful with this. This is not going to work. You have to get boots on the ground these teams are
They did the whole Birmingham thing as kind of like almost a scapegoat of an extension of COVID, even though we weren't really doing COVID things last year.
Probably smart to do it just to see if you could launch it and get people familiar with it and then say, and by the way, this is coming to your town next year. If you like it watching in an empty stadium in Birmingham, wouldn't it be a lot more fun, Philadelphia fans, if we were actually in the stadium and playing? Yeah, I get it.
All right, all right. I'm looking at the USFL.
What do you got for me?
USFL schedule.
You sound a little dejected.
Well, I am. Because at first I got excited. You know, you had the Philadelphia Stars playing against the Memphis Showboats in Memphis, Tennessee.
Right, right.
And you had the New Jersey Generals taking on the Birmingham Stallions in Birmingham, Alabama. Makes sense.
Makes sense.
That's Saturday. Sunday, you had the Michigan Panthers taking on the Houston Gamblers in Memphis, Tennessee.
God, okay.
And the Pittsburgh Maulers taking on the New Orleans Breakers. Can you guess where?
In New Orleans.
No, Birmingham, Alabama.
Birmingham, Alabama.
So the opening weekend is either in Memphis or Birmingham.
So that's not going to work.
Yeah, then the following Saturday, all the games are in Birmingham. The following Sunday, all the games are in Canton, Ohio.
Yeah, they got Joel Klatt doing these games last year for Fox, the USFL games. And he was all in. He knew all the players. He was well-researched on guys you never heard of.
I mean, I don't know how you
build...
A cup
of coffee in college.
I don't know how you build this fan base.
You can't build it. You can't build it. If you don't have boots on the ground, you can't build it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, sure, there's games in Birmingham. Like, Memphis is getting to play at home. Birmingham's getting to play at home sometimes. But then you have Canton, Ohio hosting games. And then the following week, it's, you know, back to Alabama, Birmingham. And then Detroit, Michigan is hosting games.
They had games last year where the television, it was practically empty between two teams that were not Birmingham.
Yeah, this is
on TV. There was like sections of Legion Field that were completely empty.
Yeah, as far as I can tell, looking at the teams, New Jersey Generals do not play at home at all. New Orleans Breakers will not have a home game at all. Houston won't have a home game.
Where would these teams play?
Like, Pittsburgh is Pittsburgh a home game in Canton, Ohio? Is that their home field?
Yeah, is that where they're playing? Like, what would be realistic if you were a USFL guy and said, like, you imagine going, well, we could play at Heinz Field. You're like, no, 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 no.
Yeah.
You don't want to play in a 79,000 seat football stadium and show, you know, because even if you get 10,000 people.
What about Pitt University?
Yeah, right.
Does that work? Or is that, you know, is Pitt University still too big?
Yeah. You could play in a. I don't know where you could play. I don't know where you could play to make it.
See,
feel
I mean,
like it's
I think
nice
with some of these games, what they should have done, that, you know, if you're going to do it, I mean, have Houston play in Houston, but you can play in one of these high school football stadiums.
Yeah, I guess you could.
Because these high school football stadiums are enormous, but not over the top that, you know, it's not Energy Stadium.
That's true. That's true. You could do that. Well, we'll see. But the XFL, I just haven't seen enough news. I haven't seen enough news since I mean, they're rolling along with their schedule, but you just don't hear about it anymore. Talk Sacramento Kings next.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsNap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, let's go back to the Progressive guest line. At Progressive, we're making things easier for you. We'll help you bundle your home and car insurance together so you can save on both. Learn more at progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. Kyle Draper joins us, Kings TV play-by-play announcer, Sacramento, getting ready for the opening round of the playoffs against the Golden State Warriors. How are you, Kyle? Thanks for joining us.
What's up, guys? Thanks for having me on.
How would you describe the season of the Sacramento Kings? How would you best describe the way this team plays?
I would say edge of your seat, thrilling, magical. I'm trying to think of all the
nice.
The
I like that.
to come up with, because you know, here's the thing about the Sacramento Kings. We may not win every game, but every game's surely exciting. We're in every game. You know, there's no, you know, 80 to 78 or 95 to 93s. This team has scored more than 100 points in every game except for this season, I believe. It's a historic offense, and the shots may not always fall, but you'll definitely be entertained with this team.
For those people who have caught glimpses of them late night, can't stay up to watch them when they're playing on a Tuesday and on national TV, can you give us an idea of where this team came from? How long this journey was? Is a three seed surprising, or did you always see it sort of being building up? De'Aaron Fox is a great player. Who else is contributing? Where did this all begin, and how did this progress?
You know, I at first thought I was going to say it happened overnight, but I'll go back to trade deadline a season ago, not this past season, a season ago when they brought in Domantas Sabonis. And Sabonis in the trade, obviously Tyrese Haliburton was a fan favorite. Everybody loved him. Everybody was hurt when he was traded. But Sabonis landed in Sacramento the morning after the trade was made, went through his physical, did everything, and played that night in the game against Minnesota and went out there and had a double-double. And so you saw just what Monty McNair, our GM, saw in this guy. And the atmosphere was electric. De'Aaron Fox played his best game of the season. And all of a sudden, you started to think about this two-man game called Fox and the Ox. De'Aaron Fox and the Ox is Domantas Sabonis. And you started to say, okay, I see something there. But no one expected the third season West. We were hoping for a play-in, maybe six seed kind of season. But, man, this team has been rolling. Outside of the 0-4 start, they haven't lost three games in a row since November. I mean, it's just been tremendous. And I give Mike Brown and the players, the guys like Kevin Herter, who's a newcomer, Malik Monk. I mean, they just upgraded the talent too, guys. Let's keep it real. You know, the last couple of years, it was a borderline G League roster that the Kings were rolling out there. You had guys, you know, playing rotation minutes that aren't even in the league anymore. And so I think they upgraded the roster, and you have two all-stars, and that's where I first started to see that, you know what, this team can actually compete.
121 points per game. What does that look like? What, is it a fast team? Is it a more efficient team but still same tempo, or is this quick, blink of an eye, they can overcome deficits or bury you?
Oh, it's quick, blink of an eye. It's frenetic. It's breakneck pace, and it's not like the old Phoenix Suns 7 seconds or less.
Sure,
it's more execution, half court. Guys are always cutting, moving. It's sort of like Golden State light almost, but they play a lot through Domantas Sabonis, and you know, there was a game a few days ago, about a week or so ago, and I can't remember who it was against. I'll have to look it up. But they weren't playing that well. They were down at the half. And in past years, when the Kings aren't playing well and when they're down, you think, all right, we're not going to win this one. But it's at a point now, guys, where even if you're trailing by 8-10 at the half, there's this belief that you can't hold this offense down the full 48. And that's what happened. Third quarter, they come out and score 42 points, and then they run away with the win. And so I just think this offense, you know, like I said, the shots may not always be falling, but they put so much pressure on opposing defenses that, you know, eventually somebody's going to get hot, whether it's Fox or Herter or Malik Monk, Keegan. I mean, they have multiple guys now that can get you 20 points on any given night.
Kyle Draper joins us, Kings play-by-play announcer, as Sacramento gets ready for Golden State. So I got kind of a two-part question here about this series with Golden State. One, give us your assessment of Golden State. This is a team that wins games at home. Road record's not that good. They're the defending champs. Maybe there's a championship hangover and they flip the switch. But the second question is, and this is more kind of like give us an idea of the relationship in Northern California, the Sacramento-Golden State dynamic, is it a rivalry? Are the cities kind of rivals? How does that work? So the first part, your assessment of the Warriors, and then give us kind of the general history of the two teams in Northern California.
I think the Warriors are a team to be reckoned with. I think they're a scary team. You know, one thing in this matchup I'm worried about is Golden State's number two in offense in terms of points per game. And so if they get hot with their shooting, I mean, it could be a 130-128 kind of playoff game. And so that scares me a little bit. Obviously, Steph Curry and the boys, that scares me. And so I just think, you know, this is a great matchup of, you know, a coach in Mike Brown that knows his former squad, knows the Warriors well. And I think it's going to be a good series. You know, I think the most important game is going to be game one, because if the Kings lose game one, then all this talk about the Warriors unable to win on the road or whatever, that goes out of the door. Regarding the rivalry, it is a rivalry among the fans this season. I wouldn't say that there's a rivalry when it comes to the cities. I think there's sort of a little brother complex when it comes to Sacramento, when they look at San Francisco. I could say also that there's a little superiority complex when you talk to people from the Bay Area and you tell them you live in Sacramento, they sort of thumb their nose up at you a little bit. You know what I mean? What's interesting about the rivalry on the court, fans of the Warriors during the regular season have had a loud presence inside Sacramento's home arena. And, you know, I'll go on the air and it pains me, you know, to see so many Warriors fans. You're talking 35-40% of the audience, the crowd, Golden State fans. And so I think that adds a little more fuel to this come game one, because I'm interested to see how many Warriors fans will actually be able to get in the door. This is a historic game for the Sacramento Kings. And so you would hope that Sacramento fans would fill that building. But then you look at some of the prices that these tickets are going for on the resale market. Oh, my gosh. And so I couldn't blame someone for selling their tickets, you know, a $200 ticket for $1,500 or whatever. You know, I get it. I understand it. But there's definitely a rivalry among the fan bases. But I liken the Warriors fan base to what the Sacramento Kings fan base is. So the Kings fan base is sort of what the Warriors fan base was before Steph Curry, you know? And so I went on the radio show the other day, and I said, the Warriors, they're not a blue blood legacy franchise. Let's not act like, you know, they've had decades of dominance. They found new wealth in Steph Curry. And so, but if you talk to Warriors fans, you would think that they're in the same category as the Lakers or the Celtics or some of these, you know, legendary franchises.
Mike Brown, and I like stories like this. He's in the league. He's a head coach. He's in Cleveland. He goes to the Lakers. He goes back to Cleveland one more time. Then he's out of the head coaching job, but he's in a high profile position in Golden State. He's filling in when Steve Kerr can't coach. He spends a good amount of time there. And then he gets hired, and it's 30 wins, 30 handfuls, and now it's 48 victories this season.
Right, right.
What is he walking into, and how does he turn a 30-win team into the 3 seed in the Western Conference?
Well, Mike Brown will be the first to admit he's a different coach than he was at his previous stops in Cleveland and the Lakers. And he says, and he said it the other day, one of the things he's learned is how to read his players, how to listen to his players. You know, he admits he's sort of an OCD kind of guy, detail-oriented, you know. He's so prepared. And he works his players extremely hard. And at times, you know, this season he's listened to his veterans, the Harrison Barnes of the world, the Matthew Dellavedovas, you know, guys who have been in the league a number of years. And he is able to gauge the mood, the psyche of his team a lot better. As great as Mike Brown is, and, you know, when you talk to coaches around the league, that one of the things they say is he's a motivator, whether you're guy 1 through 13. But one thing that's happened, the players have bought into him. And when you have that mix, guys, you can have a magical season.
Kyle Draper, again, Kings TV play-by-play announcer on Sacramento. Light the beam, my friend. Thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it.
All right, take care. Talk to you guys.
You got it.
Thanks, man.
Again, Kyle Draper on a Progressive Guest Line talking Sacramento Kings. We'll come back, wrap up the show, get you set for, tonight's play-in games in the 9-10 region of the NBA.
With Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, this hour we gave you an insight into the Phoenix Suns and the Sacramento Kings gearing up for this weekend. So tonight, if you are into the rest of the play-in tournament, the 9-10 matchups, Chicago and Toronto, New Orleans and Oklahoma City, those are tonight. Winners move on, loser goes home. And like we said earlier in the show, no Zion Williamson for the Pelicans. Despite being healthy, he just is not quite mentally ready to play basketball. I don't mean to be rude, but I'm sorry, but I'm just not really sympathetic with this. I'm not. I am more sympathetic to an athlete saying, hey, look, I don't trust my knee. Okay, yeah, because I'm not in that body. I'm like, eh. But if you tell me you're healthy and you're not ready because you feel like you can't make the moves, well, make the moves. See what happens. Get through it. Or give them the money back. Like, don't cash the checks that come in. I'm sure the union would be pretty upset with you if you did that. But you hear my point. Like, how long can you just keep cashing checks from the New Orleans Pelicans and still be like, no, nah, man, it's...
You know, I think I saw where he has an extension that's being enacted.
Yeah.
They've already given him an extension. Yeah. It's like 5 years, $194 million.
I think that's why they want to coddle him on this. I think they realize, like, with Zion, when he plays, he's magnificent. He's great. He plays, he's great. He just doesn't play a lot. But if we can get him to a point where he's playing 75 games a year or 70 games a year, then we're going to be a fantastic basketball team. But we're not. We're not. By the way, I want to thank Kyle Draper for joining us. Mike Brown's story is really awesome, isn't it? I mean, Mike Brown.
It really is.
Right, Mike Brown was like LeBron's coach, right? I mean, Mike Brown was in Cleveland twice on two occasions. But when he left Cleveland the second time, he went to Golden State. And he was with, he remember when Luke Walton had the job at Golden State for a second? Like, he was the coach that was holding the seat for Kerr. Kerr got the job. Kerr, he stuck around Golden State when Kerr had the back problems and COVID and all that stuff. He was the coach. He was like, I'll reset. And then the Sacramento Kings go, instead of finding a young assistant, like when Ime Udoka got the job with the Celtics, we're like, who's that? Like, the Kings didn't go, hey, we're hearing good things about this guy in Indiana. Like, we're finding good things about a young basketball coach at St. Peter's. You know, like, they didn't do that. They found a guy that has an NBA experience, had been out of the game a while, but was doing good things as an assistant at Golden State. It's come here. And all he did was turn a 32-team win team into a 48-win team in the third seed in the West. Well done, Mike Brown.
And leave us all scratching our heads.
How did they do it?
And leaving us to the point right now where we're like, oh, man, the Warriors are going to walk all over this. This is the third seed that you want to face.
Seriously? How many?
You know, but maybe this, you know, are we not? We're definitely not giving the Kings enough credit.
I love the way he said that, okay, so this team, they knew they were good. They had De'Aaron Fox. But then they got Sabonis, and that's the reason they're the three seed in the Western Conference. Like that, yeah, Sabonis was very, very important. When you're telling me that, it means it's a little bit more than talent. It's coaching, right? It's buying in to the players that are around you. Like, what a great – he was – Kyle Draper was a great guest. That was a really good insight to a team.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I hate to say this, I didn't see Sacramento – in a lot of promos on TNT from their basketball games this year. I didn't see a lot of, like, when I saw the lineup for like a TNT Thursday or something, I didn't see a lot of Sacramento Kings.
Yeah, that was unfortunate.
So a lot of people didn't get to see them this year if you live outside of the Northern California area. But the other thing that they're talking about, and again, you guys know me, I'm not going to apologize for it. I like these big picture type of things. You're talking about a city. Like, we just talked about the Phoenix Suns. Here come the Phoenix, you know, here comes Phoenix, right? And the Suns, and they're going into this market brand new. It's in the 1970s, and it's a up and coming city, but it's not this great metropolis that you see. A lot of desert, and here's the city in the hot, sweltering heat of Arizona. But the Suns are going to try to make it work, and they make it work, and then here comes everybody else, right? Well, Sacramento's not going to bring in everybody else. There's not going to be an NFL team in Sacramento. There's enough up there. There was enough up there. But the reality is that the Sacramento, for people in Sacramento, this is their thing. This is their team, right? So now you've got the diehards that have been living through bad years since the last time they made the playoffs. And now you've got the bandwagoners who are jumping on board this light the beam craze of a team that's the third seed in the Western Conference. that don't want to root for Golden State, that don't want to root for anybody else, you know, other, you know, they don't want to root for the Lakers or the Clippers. They don't want to do. They want to root for the Kings, and because that's where they live. And so that's the two different kind of levels of the cities, how they've embraced their team. And Mike Brown has rewarded the people with a very fun basketball team. I'm nervous for them because I think they are going to be playing a team that I'm not going to say toying. I don't think the Warriors went out and purposely won just 11 road games this year. But I do. I say this all the time. There is a switch. You are bored with the regular season when you are an athlete winning multiple championships.
Yeah.
That's just
the human nature. Or in it all the time. And
look at Brooks Koepka. Brooks Koepka is like, these live events don't matter. It's the majors that matter, right? Like,
right.
Tiger said it. It's just there are tournaments I'm up for. There's others I'm just not.
No, in fact, I mean, and it's like with Koepka always coming out and saying that, you're almost giving him a free pass for being a
sure.
part of Live.
That's right.
It's like, oh, okay, right. We get it. You don't want to play all the mandatory PGA tours you have to play or PGA
exactly.
events you have to play.
And are we going to fault Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, and Draymond Green that they don't want to put a full effort in Atlanta
right.
on a Tuesday night in January on a 6-game East Coast road trip?
You think they sit back like, the East doesn't even want
Can
them.
We just get to the playoffs and then we'll figure it out? Like I don't blame them. I don't blame them. And they'll say all the right competitive things. Oh, yeah, looks losing streak is bothering us. It's not bothering you.
No.
When you get to the first round, you'll flip it. And the thing that worries me is, like he said, that, and I would be worried too, like he said, you want to play fast? You want to put up 121 points a game? Golden State will put up 121 points a game.
Yeah, they will.
They'll do that too.
They might do that in the third quarter.
You're not going to boat race Golden State out of the gym. You could with other teams. Like if they had a first-round matchup with, you know,
any team.
Clippers. Right? You could boat race them out of the gym, but you're not doing that with Golden State. As quickly as you could go up on them is as quickly as they'll come back on you. I love the Western. Can I just embrace the Western Conference and give it a big fat kiss?
Well, I mean, you know, I also want to say what Kyle Draper had said, that, you know, where he was talking about the Warriors might be a little full of themselves because they believe they're a blue blood championship
right.
program, but they're not.
They're not.
It is. I've never really heard that term with the NBA.
They're not the Celtics or the Lakers.
Right.
Like,
are those the only two that are really blue bloods? That's
but
it.
I don't think a blue blood is we got the right players and now let's win four or five
right.
or six. I think a blue blood is we won in the 60s and then we got some more players and then we won in the 70s and then we won in the 80s and then we won in the 90s and that's the Lakers.
I mean, you could have made an argument for the Sixers, but there is a reason why they had the number one pick year after year after year.
Sure. I think there's only two in the NBA. I think there's only two. And in the Celtics case, it's we won in the 60s and a little bit in the early 70s, I think. But then we won in the 80s, and then we disappeared for 20 years and were pretty irrelevant until we won it again in 2008.
So now you're making the argument there's only one blue blood.
There's really only one blue blood. That's what I'm talking. I think a blue blood is with different players and a different turnover of individuals, we keep winning titles. That's the Laker. That's the one thing about the Lakers that I've always respected.
Yeah.
They will find their way back to the top. It's going to be with different people. It's going to be with different coaches, but they will find their way back to the top. It may take 5 years, but they'll find their way back to the top.
But I got to still keep the Celtics there. Even though I can't stand them, I got to keep the Celtics.
Hey, listen, 80s, 2008,
yeah.
Then they played in 2010.
Too many.
And lost,
I mean,
2022,
you know, here's the deal, Tony. It was that those were the times they won. They dominated those decades.
Right. And he's also.
And we're seeing it now.
In baseball, it's the Yankees.
Right.
It's the Dodgers. It's like he's right. These blue blood programs that have a history of winning championships. Yeah, just getting three guys together and winning four or five championships in a period of time, that's not a blue blood.
No,
program.
Because you and I were talking during the break. We don't even remember the Warriors.
No.
Growing
except
up.
Except Rick Barry. That's about
it.
That's all I remember.
The Chris. I remember Tim Hardaway because the killer crossover.
Chris Mullin.
That was the only reason why I remember him. And Chris Mullin could shoot.
They beat Dallas in the first round when Dallas was a one seed. I'm thinking like 07, 08, 08, one of those years. But that's about it.
That's it.
I know Oracle used to be a really, really tough place to play. It was really loud. But, yeah, he's right. They're not a blue blood. They're just a successful dynasty today. All right, the Lombardi line is next. We got Throwback Thursday for you tomorrow. Enjoy the 8-9 play, 10-9-10 playing games tonight.